The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host, and this is a special edition of the Baby Grand Football Show.
That's right, baby. We're back. We haven't been kicked off yet. I thought maybe we said some enough offensive things last week where I wouldn't be back with you this week, Will, but we made it through. We made it here. And I've got a bag of Bildos for you for tonight's, talking about, the conversation and everything else that we have going on.
Well, this show will, if you're listening, this is Wednesday, October 14th. You can also check out in the feed a recap of the Bills and Titans game in Tennessee, the second ever, TUNF game. You can't actually say TNF. If you say TNF, you will be electrocuted by Joe Buck. So it's TUNF.
Can I ask you this, all right? Because I don't need to sidetrack the conversation. I know we don't have a ton of time, but Tuesday night football, I don't think it's such a bad idea. Like, I actually think the NFL needs to explore looking at having football on nights other than just Thursday and Monday night. Obviously, Sunday is going to be NFL too. Stay away from Friday. Stay away from Saturday.
Let's get rid of Thursday and add Tuesday.
No. Hear me out. Use Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And here's why. A, you've got flexibility due to COVID. Like, this is your chance to experiment with it. Why not? B, there has been a shift in how consumers absorb the content they're viewing. Everything's almost on demand now. You look at all the different digital platforms, Netflix, Hulu, anything else you want to talk about, even cable subscribers.
Yes, all access.
A lot of it's on demand. And so for that reason, I don't think you're running into this conflict anymore where you're like, oh, people are going to rather watch this show or that show. People aren't tuning in when that show is airing. If it's airing on a 7 p.m., 8 p.m. time slot anymore, they're going to go back and watch on demand when their time sees fit. So why not then say, all right, let's put this team in prime time? Because A, you're going to find viewership there, regardless of what night it is during the week. And the other thing is, it's good for your brand. It's good for the players. Like, imagine people on the West Coast who, didn't have a chance to see, Josh Allen at all this year in Buffalo, right? It's usually going to be regional games. They're not going to get national platforms unless it's Thursday night, Monday night, Sunday night, right? Putting it on other nights of the week, it gives them those opportunities to build in those brands of the league, the face of the league. It gives more opportunity for betting, more opportunity for exposure with fantasy. Like, I know people are worried about the pig getting too fat and that being an issue, but this isn't baseball or basketball or hockey where you're playing 82 games in those cases or 160 plus games, and you have to worry about fatigue. Like, I think the only fatigue would be if you went to 17, 18 games, then maybe you worry about, how often it's being played. But I just think when you look at the shift of how people are consuming what they're watching now, live events crush it. NFL crushes it. It's the only thing that is. And I know ratings are a little bit down this year, but that's because you have all this other, these other sports scattered. I actually think this is a great opportunity for the NFL to experiment with having games, maybe move to Tuesday, Wednesday, and obviously still have Thursday due to COVID, and see what the ratings look like and see how it goes. And by the way, this also then solves that problem of, well, now we've got teams having to play on a short week. That's not great for player safety. All right. Well, then we have a team that plays on a Thursday night, and maybe the following week they play on a Wednesday night. So it's not quite as much of a short week. Like, as a former player, You don't have off days during the NFL season. That's just the reality of it. You might have an off day, but you're working your tail off no matter what day it is to prepare, to recover, or work on something fundamentally. And that's the same for any player, any coach. So I just think this is an opportunity the NFL should really start to look at moving forward.
I like it. I love it. Look, I was looking at, I want some more of it. I was looking at the DraftKings setup for Tuesday night. And this is the last night, obviously. I mean, they have a contest and we're recording this at 3:30 on Tuesday afternoon. The game kicks off at 7:00. So 3.5 hours to go before the contest. $10 per entry, max 150 entries per person. 176,000 is the cap for number of people that can enter. There are already 87,000 people who have joined. So $870,000 in this pot already. It's 300K to first. DraftKings takes a huge cut off the top. As we know, DraftKings business, good for the NFL as well, as we've talked about. And so I think, yeah, I mean, look, like people are going to play these standalone fantasy options on the games where there are all these standalone games.
Yeah. And think about this from this perspective. One last thing. This is similar to me as like real estate. So you've got Tuesday and Wednesday nights that are sitting there and they're kind of being like unoccupied, right? Like you're looking at that land saying, you know, people don't know if that's value or not, but if you put the right thing there, people are going to go. It's going to become an attraction. It's going to be an actual destination, right? And this is where I look at, like, for example, the meatpacking district in New York. At one point in time, people were like, you can't put nice restaurants and bars or clubs and lounges and things like that there. No way. And then all of a sudden, it became a really, really popular area for bars and restaurants and clubs and so forth. Like, you wouldn't have thought that, though, 20 years before it actually came to fruition. I think that's maybe what we're looking at, too, at the NFL, with the way I think broadcast television and cable television and digital has changed everything, and really for consumers, how what their consumption habits are. So I really think this is something that needs to be looked at and maybe toyed with or experimented with moving forward.
All right. Cool. I like it. Let's do it. Sorry, Debo was hitting me up about a sound issue. Do I sound funky to you?
No, you sound great.
I sound great.
Better than ever.
Oh, that's good to hear. Thanks, Brady. All right, let's talk about some of the bigger issues. This is basically, Debo went and pulled for the rundown, my Sorting the Sunday Pile column that I wrote on Monday. And one of the primary things, and we talked about this on the Pick Six show. So on CBS Sports HQ every day, basically at 4 p.m. on CBS Sports HQ. Make sure you tune in. Brady is featured many times throughout the course of the week. And Dak Prescott. I feel like you and I have talked about it, but I guess we haven't for this podcast. That's what shook me here. First of all, I mean, I think it's obvious that the Cowboys are in trouble without Dak Prescott, but it's good that they have Andy Dalton there. I'm curious about your thoughts on maybe the Cowboys there and how they'll function first, and then also Dak's sort of recovery back from this injury.
Yeah, so in regards to the Cowboys, what they do moving forward, they've got Dalton. They're lucky they have Dalton. He's an experienced guy. He's taken, you know, the Bengals to the playoffs before. And obviously, look, he looked good, you know, and poised coming in and helping them get a win versus the Giants. So I think they've got that working for them. Now, I said this too on the Pick Six podcast. I believe this offensive line has gotten better as they've started to mesh and gel together this year. I think they're going to rely more on the run game, you know, and in part because you've got a backup quarterback that maybe isn't quite as capable as he once was, or as Dak Prescott has showcased this year. But Zeke's one of your best player, if not your best player on offense. So continue to lean on him and then ask for Andy Dalton to have to make throws when called upon. This might actually be what's best for them moving forward to win football games, but also for their defense. That's seeing a lot of plays, you know, seeing a lot of snaps out there. It obviously hasn't been good this season. So maybe shortening the game or relying on the run game not only helps out, you know, their chances of winning a game, but helps out their defense. And obviously their offensive line too, where again, you've gotten some guys who are banged up or missing the rest of the season. So this should help protect that group. In regards to Dak, I think he's going to be fine. He's going to be able to recover from an orthopedic that I talked to. He said, look, for an elite athlete, it's probably going to be 6 months, including rehab at the earliest when we're going to be seeing him again. So this season is done. You're talking about him maybe being able to get back into the fold and things at the end of the offseason, you know, maybe OTAs and mini camp, you know, in 2021, depending on where we are with that with COVID. So the real question becomes, where is he at that point in time? You know, that's obviously going past what would be the other deadline for the Cowboys to make a decision on whether or not he's franchise tagged for a second year or if they're going to let him go into free agency. I don't see him going into free agency. I think the Cowboys obviously would have to slap a tag on him the second time, even with him recovering from this injury, unless Andy Dalton leads this team to a Super Bowl, which seems somewhat unlikely. So let's then look at what that's going to look like, right? He's playing the second year under the tag. He'll make, what, $37 million, roughly like that, 120% of what he made this past year. And then he's got that third year tag that would be astronomical. That'd be what, like $50 million or whatever it is. So if you're looking at the framework of how they go about retaining him, keeping him there, he's either playing another year under the tag, which look, it was his decision to turn down this most recent offer. So then it comes down to, has his perspective changed because of the injury? Is he now looking at it saying, well, I wanted a 4-year deal before. I still want a 4-year deal. But maybe I'm willing to do 5 just for a little bit more security because of this injury. Because remember, this franchise tag this year is fully guaranteed. So he still gets that $31 million.
Yeah.
So this really sets up still with the framework of his long-term extension being, 2 years under the next 2 years under the tag, which is going to be roughly about $90 million. So he should be looking at north of $100 million, $120 million guaranteed at signing, and, an average annual salary somewhere in the ballpark between $37 to $40 million. So I don't know that much has changed in regards to what he's looking for and what he's probably going to get paid from the Dallas Cowboys, even with sustaining this injury.
So here's what I sort of wonder and how this might happen. I think you probably disagree, but I think what's going to happen is the Cowboys are going to be thinking, okay, we're sort of this is actually worse than Dak winning MVP. And because now, before you had Dak, who you knew what he wanted, you knew you're probably going to have to pay him for more than $40 million. He goes out and wins MVP and takes you to the playoffs or plays really well, sets the passing record, whatever it is. Like, his price has gone up, but not like an insane amount. Like, he's not going to $50 million. Now the problem is that you don't know. There's the uncertainty of his recovery, and you have to feel good about it, but you're going to have to make this decision sometime in February about whether or not to franchise tag him. And that's early in the process. So if you drop that franchise tag him when he's not ready, are you thinking about rescinding the franchise tag? I don't think you can let him get the free agency because there are going to be teams out there,
Real quick. If Kirk Cousins got $90 million fully guaranteed, right? Roughly, I think it was 87 for his 3-year deal. How much is Dak going to get?
I mean, Dak would get, if he signed a 4-year deal, he'd get $160 million fully guaranteed minimum, right?
Well, I mean, we'd have to see how solvent that franchise is based on the rule, right? Like how much money they'd have to have as far as the cash on hand to be able to handle that.
Get whatever he wanted.
Well, I'll put it this way. He will surpass what Cousins got, right? So we can at least say, he's going to be the nine-figure fully guaranteed mark if he so chooses to sign a deal like that, right? Not every player has chosen to go shorter and fully guaranteed like Cousins did. He didn't even choose to do that the second time around when they restructured. So we don't know that he's going to do that, but I'm with you. Like, they're going to be put in a predicament of saying, we hope he's going to be healthy. We hope he's going to be the same player, but we don't necessarily know that. But again, I don't think that makes the amount that he's going to be paid come down by any means, because if you look at where the pace and track record that he was on, he was probably equivalently, statistically speaking, to what Russell Wilson's doing this year. He had surpassed Deshaun Watson as well as Patrick Mahomes statistically. And those are both the guys that most recently signed their deals. So, economics tells you that he's going to be signing somewhere around that $40 million average annual salary contract. And it's really going to come down to, A, are the Dallas Cowboys still willing to make that offer and commitment given the injury? And B, is Dak going to accept it if it's a 4 or 5-year deal, given that he wasn't wanting to accept a 5-year deal before? My, intuition or what I was told, I should say, by some of the people who are in the know of that negotiation was it was all about the additional year. Yeah. That, he didn't want to sign that, which, again, I told you this, it's silly considering they were going to rip that deal up anyway if he plays the way he's capable of and sign him to a new deal before it was done, whether it was a 4 or 5-year deal. So I think he still finds himself a year later in the same situation. And whether it's a 4 or 5-year deal, dude, take it, because you're still going to find yourself looking to re-up at a relatively young age, at least in this day and age of the NFL.
All right, so what if the Cowboys come out in January? Let's say their season's over. And they can negotiate with them again, because they have a window where they can negotiate with them before they have to apply the franchise tag. And they say, listen, Dak, we will give you 4 years, $37 million. We have no idea what your situation is. Do you think the Cowboys will try something like that? Because I do. And two, what do you think Dak's response will be?
I think his response would be no. I think he'd play
like, no, or like F you no.
No, I don't think he'd say F you no. I just think he'd say, look, like that's not even equivalent to what we were asking for last year. So just because the injury, I was the only thing keeping this team competitive. Like you're going to offer me less now. Like this is a minor setback, but it's not like I was the most fleet of foot. You know, before he's athletic, he can run, but he's clearly been playing from the pocket the past 2 years. That's where all his damage has been done. So, and he's continued to improve as a passer. So I think he'd politely say no. You know where we sit. And if you want me to go to free agency, so be it. If you don't, you can put the franchise tag on me. I'll gladly accept another guaranteed, fully guaranteed, what, 37, 38 million? What is it? 120%. So roughly 37 million. This year, and then you know what the third year under the franchise tag would mean. So I think he has to say no. He has to accept the tag because that, you know, it continues the window of negotiating, but it also puts in the framework of what the first 2 years of his deal should look like, right? It's that second and third year under the tag and then whatever else from then that you're projecting with the cap, which again, we should take into account. The reason why the Cowboys might be okay doing this is because that 2021 cap may plateau. Like, we don't know what that number is going to look like. We have an idea that his percentage under the, you know, as far as how much money is allocated to him under the cap is going to be much greater next year if that cap doesn't jump by a big number. But we do know 3, 4, 5 years down the road, that number is going to skyrocket, you know, as the TV rights deal is done, as we look at gambling becoming more prevalent within the NFL.
Stephen Jones also said on 105.3 The Fan, he's our future. He's special. If anyone can overcome anything, it would be Dak. This is something that our doctors feel good about, feel good that he'll overcome and come back better than ever. So once again, the Cowboys, of course, committing long-term to Dak Prescott without actually paying him, which is just something they've really liked to do for a long time now. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, will Matt Ryan be on the Falcons next year? We'll tell you yes or no.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul. The designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
That was sort of a terrible tease, but that's okay. Matt Ryan, so the Falcons fired Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff. Were you surprised by it at all?
No, I think with the way this team has been on the decline since, you know, their trip to the Super Bowl, since leading basically New England 28-3, seeing every year how they just continue to get worse and worse and worse, and then seeing them not be able to replicate the 6-8 finish that they showed last year to start this year, you kind of knew it was, you know, the end was near. I think the surprising thing is maybe that Thomas Dimitroff went along with Dan Quinn only because, you know, this is a talented roster, but I think that's the hard part is, you know, it looks like it is, but these guys haven't developed. And some of these guys, like Deion Jones, for example, who signed a second deal, you know, they haven't necessarily played up to that standard. And so I think they decided to clean house because most likely whatever head coach would come in, he probably want his own general manager that he feels comfortable working with. So it makes sense from that standpoint. I think the thing that was surprising to me was when Arthur Blank, you know, their owner comes out and doesn't necessarily give a vote of confidence to Matt Ryan. I mean, he's a guy that is has had a lot of success within your organization, but you've paid a ton of money. And I would imagine that with all the amount of money that he's been paid, like Arthur Blank has been instrumental in all those decisions and deciding whether or not to sign him to these big deals. So it's interesting only because of how much they're on the hook for next year. Like, I don't know outside of a trade, and then you've got to hope that that team has enough cap space or could restructure the contract to absorb the cap hit, that the Falcons can go anywhere but Matt Ryan at quarterback next year.
I was really surprised too at first. Now, I will say this, looking at the numbers, it is feasible. If you did a post June 1 release, you have to designate a post June 1 release, you would save $17.5 million on the cap. Giggling about
that. And how much of a cap? Is it like $50 million next year?
No. But if you do a post June 1 release, you can spread it over multiple years.
You spread it over 2 years, not multiple. Okay. It's only 2 years.
Two is multiple. Two is not singular. Okay. You can spread it over 2 years. If that's
it's a huge cap hit. And especially in a year where you don't have a ton of cap to allocate necessarily, not knowing what the cap's going to do.
Cutting Matt Ryan is not a feasible solution for the Atlanta Falcons. That's why it's so weird that he would say it. Why would he come out and say that's up to the player and that's up to the new coach? I guess for this reason,
because even if they drafted a top quarterback, it's an Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes scenario where he goes in and plays and then you get that guy some grooming. I mean, your head coach might want that. Your head coach might come in and say, look, Matt Ryan's not the problem. I'd love to have a guy who can always be in the Pro Bowl conversation every year at quarterback to start off things. You know, Matt Ryan does everything right. It's not like he's a bad leader or he's an issue in that locker room. Like, Matt Ryan's not the problem. He hasn't played well this year. He's maybe been part of the problem, but he's not the problem right now. So I think for that reason, that's why. And you're kind of handcuffed. So I think you get through next year probably with Matt Ryan. But then looking at 2022, that's where things get interesting, depending on how things go, who comes in as the head coach, and then what they do in the draft.
And look, even a trade, if you trade him before June 1st, which, you know, it was when trades have to happen in the NFL. Like, you're not right. Trading this guy in July. And I don't think you can designate a trade post June 1, can you? I think you just have to actually trade him after June 1st.
Yeah.
A pre-June 1 trade, this is via Spotrac.com, would have a dead cap hit of $44.4 million and would cost you negative 3.5 in terms of cap savings. You can't cut him before June 1st.
No, you're not cutting him in either scenario, right? Like, right. He's either on the team or he's being traded. And so I think you threw this out.
It doesn't make any sense that he would say that. Why would he say that?
Look, him being non-committal, I think is fine. I mean, look, there's a lot of things going on right now. He's got to start figuring out how he's going to go search for a head coach and general manager. Which one is he going to prioritize, right? Is he going to prioritize the general manager or the head coach? I've always been an advocate of prioritizing the head coach because ultimately your product on the field is what's most important. And so if your head coach and your general manager aren't aligned and you've got a general manager who's giving players that don't fit within the scheme or model of what that coach wants to do or character or personality of what he wants to do, it's a disaster. So, you know, I always feel it's best suited to go that direction. And I think you look at the models where it's kind of like that, right? Like Bill Belichick in New England, ultimately the buck stops with him, but he's got Nick Caserio, you know, Pete Carroll and John Schneider in Seattle. That's another example of that. So I personally feel like, or Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean, right? Like Bean was brought in afterwards. So I always feel like that usually works best. But you know, again, we'll see what decision he wants to make. I think it's hard for these owners, you know, to realize that, you know, they've got to move on from some people that helped them get to a Super Bowl. They were obviously really close and it didn't work out. Like, it's not easy for them to say goodbye to this group, I don't think.
I think that's probably accurate. I think that Arthur Blank believes that he can turn the Falcons into the Steelers, like the Steelers South or whatever it is. And he wants to do that. And look, commend him for not being Jimmy Haslam and firing everybody every 3 seconds. Like, that's good. You need continuity. And Dan Quinn's a good guy and a good coach. And Thomas Dimitroff has made a lot of smart moves. I do think Dimitroff probably outsmarted himself a few times in recent years, trading back into the first round in whatever year it was, Nashville, when I blew my face open on a scooter. When he traded it back in to get Caleb McGarry, and they got Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry, and it was like, well, this will fix everything. It's like, well, you have problems on defense too. And then, so this year they don't get
To your point, though, I feel like he had to give those edge rushers like the Vic Beasley's and the Tack McKinley, he had to give them a year because his name or reputation's on it. I didn't see anything wrong with Lidstrom and McGarry. I just think the way that offseason worked out for both those guys, both missing time and like not being ready, that's what ended up reflecting poorly. I think that was an issue. I think the Devontae Freeman contract was one that he probably regrets. Extending Deion Jones, who again hasn't turned out to be the player they had hoped. I think those are some of the things. But you know, he can only supply them with the talent. Like at some point too, you have to remember Dan Quinn was brought in there to take that defense and make them what the Legion of Boom was during Simon Seattle. It never turned into that. So as much as you know people can point out some of the mishaps of Thomas Dimitroff, there was the same for Dan Quinn, and you know that happens sometimes. I think for Arthur Blank, like the 2 years they went 7-9 in a row, like it's hard not to look within your division and go, well, the Saints were here at one point. They were 7-9 3 years in a row.
In a one big draft.
And then all of a sudden they took off after that and became a team that like has just been really unlucky trying to get to a Super Bowl. But you know, they fought through that and they believed in that group. And so it's hard not to think that Arthur Blank didn't have to just look at New Orleans and go, well, maybe we're close too if we can just stay healthy and put some of this stuff together.
I think he also looked at, I mean, look, they looked terrible on Sunday against the Panthers. Awful. I mean, just so lethargic. And I think he looked across the field at like Matt Rhule injecting a total rebuild situation with some life and the defense is flying around. He's like, oh my God, like
we shouldn't be losing to this team. This is supposed to be a rebuild team.
Right, that's not us.
Like, by the way, Joe Brady, oh my gosh. Like, you know he's going to be that next hot young head coach candidate. Like people are start talking about
his 30-year-old head coach, right?
I mean, telling you right now. How old was McVay when he was hired? 31, 32?
Yeah.
30? I mean, Joe Brady's going to be the next guy, given his experience in New Orleans, what that looked like. You know, and he wasn't the full-time play caller at LSU, mind you. He was third down red zone, which they were great while he was there, which it's obviously playing out to be a lot different this year under Scott Linehan, but you know, Joe Burrow's not there either, much to everyone else. But I mean, so far they've been competitive. Like, dude, Joe Brady's the name to keep an eye on for like that next head coaching vacancy.
Especially if, I mean, again, like Arthur Blank watching Teddy Bridgewater outplay Matt Ryan. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, listen, you have Calvin Ridley, you have all these weapons, and it's like Teddy Bridgewater is outplaying Matt Ryan. Like, you invest in, so maybe he's like, screw it, I'm going to get Joe Brady.
Maybe. I mean, look, it's not like he's not familiar with him, right? He probably saw him when LSU, you know, had watched following the SEC. He knew about him probably just from their divisional, you know, being a divisional opponent. What's that?
The title game in Atlanta? Might have been.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so I'm sure he's well aware of what Joe Brady bought to LSU last year, just being in SEC country.
Yeah, no, I meant like they played the title game in Atlanta. So I think like in his stadium.
Yeah.
The Megatron B-hole game. Okay, real quickly on the Browns. The Browns are good, Brady. 4-1 for the first time since 1994. You were but a twinkle.
It's 10 years old.
You were 10 years old. Yeah, I was 13. Is that right?
That's weird. I thought baseball was going to be the route. You know, I think I was playing in some Little League World Series in Tennessee where we got the floor mopped with us. I'll never forget my dad.
I was 13. I probably thought I'd be a professional athlete too.
Well, no, I mean, we had won some, like little college World Series thing. I don't know if it was CABA or whatever the baseball league was, but we went down then for like this big national tournament, somewhere in Tennessee. I don't know if it was in Chattanooga or somewhere, but I just remember it was like a double elimination deal. And we got double eliminated, and it wasn't close. And I'll never forget. I actually had, that year, I couldn't pitch. I was a pitcher catcher. Couldn't pitch. I had a growth plate. I threw so much as a 9-year-old. I had a growth plate, like moved down on my arm. So I was just like our DH. So I played first base, and I always had to like if it was ever like a double play ball, could never do it because I couldn't throw. So I just run out and get the out at first, and I just fake throwing the whole time. Because no one knew that, like, I couldn't throw with my arm. So I was just, like, a really good hitter at that age, waiting for my arm to heal.
They're like, this guy can't throw to second base.
Yeah, like, they had no – they didn't know. Like, no one knew the scouting report. But we ended up getting absolutely crushed in this World Series tournament. And I'll never forget, you know, my dad was, like, the type that Chopper – he was the type that would write, like, good sports. Like, they won the sportsmanship award. Like, he would take it in, like, shaving cream and put it on people's cars. Just to mess with us. And then, like, the other parents are just how pathetic our performance was. I was like, thanks for coming out. Like, and like, meanwhile, the parents are thinking, like, other people are doing it. And it was really my dad the whole time.
Yeah. Chopper Quinn's doing this? What a
he thought it was like the funniest thing in the world. Just how bad we got shellacked for those two games.
That's the kind of parent you need to get the, not just the genetics, but like the parenting of like the mentality to be a professional athlete.
He was the best. Like, he would all, yeah, thanks for coming out, kids. Like, he always had the best perspective. And he was like, our coaches, they would get kicked out. Like they would get kicked out. Mind you, I'm not going to say who, but one of our coaches was the commissioner of the AAA baseball. So think about that for a second. Like, these are like big time, like good coaches. They would get ejected all the time from umpires when I was young. And so my dad would have to come in and coach, and he would have like kids stealing. I don't even think we were allowed to steal then. He'd be like pulling pitchers after they walk one batter. And like he had this deep bullpen where we got like three kids who could pitch and like one left. You can't even
throw. I mean, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
Anyway, the Browns.
Oh, right.
The Cleveland Browns are good. How good are the Browns?
I don't know yet, because I think the only really good team we've seen them play so far this year was, you know, the Baltimore Ravens. And they're a different team than what they were week one. I think they were different because of the circumstances in the game, too, where you were down that much, you couldn't run the football the way you wanted to. So now they've gotten to a point where I think they know what their identity is. And I think the other thing that stands out to me is their culture. If you look at what they were under Hugh Jackson to then when he got fired and Greg Williams took over as the interim head coach, and they were kind of successful that year, right? It was that Baker's rookie year. And then you look at last year when they're like, all right, well, we want Freddie to, you know, stay here to keep the continuity of the offense. So let's just then make him head coach. They never really build a culture. They never really were able to get away from what Hugh was trying to do. And then Greg Williams kind of did during his time there. And then Freddie Kitchens. And then now you see like this culture that's being created. And I say culture because they're committed to something. They have an identity now. Like offensively, they're like, no, we're going to keep running the football. Like Nick Chubb's hurt. It doesn't matter. Kareem Hunt's then part of it. Now it's Darius Johnson too. We're going to incorporate some reverses to some of our playmakers and some shot plays or gadget plays and put Baker Mayfield in a position to win. And we're going to do that every single week. That's our identity. That's a commitment to what you are and really your culture. And we haven't seen that in a long time. You know, it's been this revolving door, as you alluded to earlier with Jimmy Haslam. And I think they found the guy now who, you know, if he's going to be stubborn with it, who cares? But at least for the moment has said, this is what gives us the best chance to win. This is what gives our quarterback the best chance to be successful. And he's convinced those players, whether it's Odell Beckham or Jarvis Landry, or whoever else, the stars in that team, that winning is going to be what makes them happy. You know, winning is what's going to make you feel better about yourself and your social media following or everything else that comes along with it off the field. And this is the formula to win. And so if you want your life to feel better, you know, we're going to put together the best formula to win each week. It might not be the best statistically for you, but we're going to have a chance of playing in the postseason. And that's going to be what, you know, puts a smile on everyone's face.
Browns are winning. It's a wild, wild world. 2020 is so screwed up. The Browns are winning. Derek Carr is throwing downfield. Pete Prisco is right about everything. Welcome to hell.
You got to stop giving Pete so much credit. Do you remember the combine? Pete's the one that said Justin Herbert doesn't have fire in the belly. You don't remember that?
Remember
fire in the belly?
Like, Herbert's his guy.
No, he liked his tools, but he talked about not having enough fire in the belly and being maybe a little bit introverted. Like, he talked about that with him. He talked about that with Tua. Like, remember the whole fire in the belly? Like, that was a little catchphrase all combine. And that's where it came from. He will never admit that, but that's where it came from. Pete is the flip-flopper, where you kind of forget what anyone said nowadays because the news cycle churns so much. And now he just acts like he's on everyone's bandwagon. He makes fun of me for picking Cleveland to go 10-6 last year. I picked him to go 9-7, be a playoff team this year. But you never hear him talk about that. He only says, well, he was on the Browns this year with Stefanski. Like, he'll start making those predictions, but because everyone forgets how he was so hard on this franchise earlier this year.
Pete is the flip-flopper. That's what we call him on a text thread. I know you're on a text thread with him. We call him the flip-flopper on a different text thread. So you need to fire at him.
Case in point, did he not flip-flop from our picks, okay, our picks every Wednesday, last Wednesday? He had the 49ers, and look, we didn't have a line at that point in time in the game, but he gave a score prediction. And then later on in the week, he was like, oh, I took Miami with the points. I was like, well, that was a convenient fact after the fact. That wasn't what you said on Wednesday when we made our picks. That's Pete Prisco 2020 flip-flopper. If you want a flip-flopper, go with Pete Prisco.
And by the way, it is convenient that Pete only wears flip-flops around town. All right, Brady.
I've never seen him not wearing flip-flops.
The people on CBS Sports HQ are calling me. They're harassing me nonstop right now on Skype. So I got to go. You got to go do stuff. You got a family. Talk to you soon, buddy.
I'll see you.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.